A lot. This spells danger for the entire galaxy. Once again, do not listen to the Central Services radio program, Monday mornings at 10 on CFRU. That is all.
United Nations make a chain. Every link is freedom's name.
Keep your hand on that gun. Hold on. Hold on.
Rank and D.
Hold on.
Wealth and fee.
Hold on.
Shanghai Shack.
Hold on.
Jones and Stalin.
Keep your hand on that gun. Hold on.
Now freedom's name is mighty sweet. Black and white is gonna meet.
Keep your hand on that gun. Hold on. Hold on.
Frank and Dean.
Hold on.
Wells and Sea.
Hold on.
Chang and Shen.
Hold on.
Joseph Stalin.
Keep your hand on that gun. Hold on.
Now hero, he's a little son of a gun. Kick him right back to the rising sun.
Keep your hand on that gun. Hold on.
Now Hirohito thinks he's slick. We've got to show him one more trick.
Keep your hand on that gun. Hold on.
This war is over and done. Gonna catch my buns and have some fun.
Keep your hand on that gun. Hold on.
Gonna get me a gal who sure can twist, who it ain't isolationist.
Keep your hand on that gun. Hold on.
United Nations make a chain. Every link is freedom's name.
Keep your hand on that gun. Hold on. Hold on.
Franklin D.
Hold on.
Wilson C.
Hold on.
Shank-a-shank.
Hold on.
Joseph Stalin.
Keep your hand on that gun. Hold on.
Hey, yes, hold on indeed. That was Hold On, huh, by the Union Boys. And before that, we heard High Price Blues by Branny McGee here on This Ungodly Hour. No, no, it isn't. This is Welcome to the, this is the Working Week. Welcome to the Working Week. My name is Scotty Hertz. Yeah, it probably was something you'd hear on the wonderful This Ungodly Hour, but no, I picked up this CD. It's called the Little Red Box of Protest Songs box set at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Cleveland this weekend, which was my field trip. And yeah, I'm not really the type of person to go on and on about my trip and how great it was. And I usually try and find, like, try and work in something to the trip that, you know, that's not something you would normally go looking for on vacation. That's just how I am. And this time I was drawing the link. I went with a buddy of mine. It was a road trip. Another one couldn't make it, so it was just the two of us. And since, of course, the main draw in Cleveland these days is the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, I was trying to make the link between rock and roll and guns, which isn't a difficult link to make from everything with, you know, Guns N' Roses and all the songs that mention guns and how guns figure really highly in a lot of rock and roll, among other topics. But guns come up a lot, and it's you know... There's almost a saturation in rock of guns. As I said, the prime example being Guns N' Roses, but of course Elvis shooting out televisions, and there's that Crosby, Stills, and Nash album where they're all sitting on the front porch with these long rifles. And I remember seeing a picture of the Birds, the band, doing the same thing with rifles, goofing around. And it's like, well, so what is it? What is it that draws us to guns? Well, it's usually males, obviously, of course, is that link, but... That wasn't the main thing. It's something that was sort of been on the back burner for a long time, and it finally happened. And it was interesting that the long gun registry vote had happened days before, 48 hours before we went. And we mentioned that to our NRA registered and card carrying trainer who was teaching us all about the safe handling of firearms. And I can't say that my view of guns has changed completely, but my appreciation for guns, and I don't necessarily mean a great appreciation for guns, but my sort of marveling at the technology and how much goes into them was unbelievable. Not just, and I'm not even just talking about culturally, but the amount of guns and the different types of guns and the manufacturers of guns and the size of guns. One of the guns in this gun shop we were in, which was also the range, was the one used in Afghanistan. It was a record shot that shot somebody 2 kilometers away. And the guns that we were training on were tiny compared to stuff like that. But yeah, so I'm going to talk about it more probably in print. And I know print is a dying medium, but it sort of lends itself to print. We couldn't really record what we were doing. I would say the most frightening part of the gun experience, because the rock and roll experience was great, was that somebody else had come in with his wife and son. And the son was maybe, I don't know, 12 years old, give or take, young fella. And this guy was shooting off the largest gun that the gun club allowed you to fire, which was a .30-06. and that number probably doesn't mean anything to you. Because, I mean, you know, you throw these numbers around generally in Canada, especially in an urban environment, nobody knows what that number means. But it's a bloody big shell, and it sounded like the building was going to collapse because you're just in this. It's a bunker, essentially, made of cinder blocks and, of course, all paneling up. And the panels, we learned towards the end of our experience, between the partitions between people aren't bulletproof. Which sounds, you know, wrong, and I think it is. And our instructor actually started pointing out the holes where people had misfired and where people had done the wrong thing. He seemed to like my friend and I quite a bit. We played it cool. We didn't make our views known about guns, pro or con. And he said that if he was allowed to, he would have given us our concealed weapons certification. So I'm going to add this, and then I'm going to play the piece that just one last anecdote. Our trainer walks around when he's out in about 24 hours with a gun. He has a gun cocked with the safety on down the back of his pants with a shirt over it. And that is 100% legal in Ohio, which is where we were. Not from Kent State, actually. And once you get over that, and sort of accustomed to it, and I don't think it's something I could ever get accustomed to, so maybe I'd never move to Ohio, because, you know, it's concealed. You don't notice it. He's got it in his pants and just ready to rock at any time for the enemy or perceived enemy or whoever it is. And but then he also said he kept one loaded, same, I don't know if it was the same gun, under his pillow. And he wasn't kidding. You know, that's the kind of thing you hear as a joke, like, oh, keep one of those loaded under my pillow, blah, blah. He does. Owns 11 guns, rifles and guns. So 11. And the rules are a little bit different there. So we were sort of passing, you know, information on to him about, well, this is going on in Canada. And he was commenting about how California got rid of their long gun registry. And I think these exact words were, it was a victory for us. So us being, I guess, NRA people. So take that as you will. That was my weekend experience. Of course, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame was really good. They had lots of interesting stuff to see up close. And you kind of realize how sort of very nondescript items like Jimi Hendrix's couch or Johnny Cash's bus. Johnny Cash's bus was impressive in its sparseness. I don't think anybody, especially somebody who's a legend, would have a bus like that these days. I mean, it wasn't exactly luxurious by any means. It was a coach for sure. JC Unit 1. I was very impressed by that. I will say that Johnny Cash was a very modest man, and I believe that he was now that I've seen his bus. And there was a few pilgrims there. There was pilgrims checking out Elvis's car and his shirt, and there were tears. Yay. Oh, yes, there were tears. People melting at the sight of Elvis's car or his whatever. And the weird thing was they had three Michael Jackson outfits a row, including the one he wore in Thriller, the shredded jacket. And you could potentially reach out and touch them. And, of course, it's a museum, so you're not supposed to touch. But it was going on. It was interesting. Such as Cleveland. And, I mean, you want to talk about the collapse. Cleveland is exodus. But then again, when we got home, we saw elements of it in Welland, Ontario, among other places, where it's just, you know, the houses are boarded up and there's nothing. So, but that's a topic for another day because I want to get to this. This is part three of the street bands. The Ingenuity Festival was also on in Cleveland, and there was a great, we sort of heard them from a distance and didn't see them. It was a puppet theater and marching band together talking about the issues I was just mentioning there about housing or lack of and foreclosures. So October 1st is Anti-Foreclosure Day. I don't know if that's specific to Ohio or Cleveland or if it's universal. I will find out, and I will get to that. But anyway, some radical marching bands are getting more creative about making a political spectacle by becoming the protest themselves and using the internet to make their message viral. Making Contacts' Pauline Bartolone knows all about it. Her roommates are in a band called the Brass Liberation Orchestra in San Francisco. So here is Pauline now.
Francisco Bay Area, the two immediately started talking about starting a radical brass band. Her sister was in one in Italy, and Jamie had seen her in action.
You know, both my sister and I had gotten involved in different sort of left political work, and I think also we're both feeling somewhat frustrated by the sometimes factionalization and sectarian atmosphere, which is, you know, maybe particular of the Bay Area because it's such a big left culture that we have the luxury of becoming sectarian. And so about 15 of us started playing in someone's living room, and I picked up the trombone for the first time and started learning from a friend who just sort of taught me the positions and enough that I could play a bass line on a song.
So in 2002, the band hit the streets as the Brass Liberation Orchestra, or the BLO. The idea was, and is, to support unity within the left. In the beginning, they were playing a lot at anti-war rallies in San Francisco, like the massive street protests in 2003 opposing the U.S. invasion of Iraq. The BLO was there at the breakaway marches, where a couple of hundred people often came face-to-face with the police. They played their music in hopes of de-escalating the tension, as opposed to encouraging confrontation.
We used to play, for example, this old Raymond Scott song, Powerhouse, which is sort of in lots of cartoons and things. And so we would play that song and sort of run around the intersection, and it would sort of, you know, confuse the police, and also the protesters were kind of like, you know, that's really funny, what's going on? And it definitely helped to sort of, you know, give pause and break the tension in the air a little bit in those moments.
Over the years, the band has seen dozens of members come and go and come back again. The BLO has been spotted at environmental justice marches against the Chevron oil refinery. They've played at co-op block parties, political fundraisers, Cinco de Mayo, and the U.S. Social Forum. And when things were really heating up during the summer of 2009 around healthcare reform, band members weren't happy when the CEO of Whole Foods, John Mackey, wrote in a column that healthcare was not a human right.
Mackey is being pretty hypocritical to sell expensive organic healthy food that is inaccessible to poor people and then say that poor people don't have a right to treatment.
That's Sarah Knorr, a union organizer and a BLO percussionist. Together with other labor organizers, they all decided to do a flash mob protest using a pop song.
We said, oh, let's go for Mackey. So one of our bandmates rewrote the lyrics to that old, I guess, 80s song, Hey Mickey. And then all very low-key went into a Whole Foods like we were going to shop. And then once folks were in the store and spread out through the store at a given queue, it all erupted. People got in with their instruments. People were dancing, singing.
Band members took the lyrics, Hey Mickey, you're so fine, and changed it to, Hey Mackey, you're a swine. Alto sax player Ophir Uziel compares the scene to watching fireworks.
I think people were in shock. It's kind of like somebody called the police. That's the reaction. Like, it's kind of hesitant mode. And kind of let them finish, and everything will be okay. People didn't understand if it's a good thing or bad thing. And that's great, because, you know, we continue to do our thing, and they can think in their own terms if it's good or bad.
The BLO got out scot-free that day. It was hard to tell what impact the mob action had, but it wasn't really about what happened on that day. It was about the media buzz it created. Everything was caught on video and immortalized on the internet. The BLO decided to do it again, almost a year later, when thousands of hotel workers were facing increased healthcare costs and workloads. The BLO teamed up with a group called Pride at Work to encourage a hotel boycott over Gay Pride weekend. They changed the lyrics of Lady Gaga's Bad Romance to Bad Hotel. Two of them dressed up as a lesbian couple in business suits and pretended to book a room while the rest of the band trickled into the fancy lobby.
And so they were having this dialogue with the staff there about rates and rooms and what rooms and should they upgrade and da-da-da. And then when they saw the sousaphone and the bass drum, then they started and one of them shouted, you know, wait, we can't stay here. This hotel's under boycott.
Wait a second, honey. We can't check in here. This hotel's under boycott.
Oh, no. Don't get caught in a bad hotel. Oh, no.
And she started singing, and then when she started singing, everyone else started singing and dancing, and we started playing. And the hotel security there did nothing. I mean, they were quite overwhelmed.
Different song, different cause, but they used the same tactics. This time, the video of the flash mob got over 250,000 hits on YouTube. A Huffington Post article linked to the video and called flash mobs the new face of political protest. Now the idea of doing flash mobs themselves are going viral. A different radical brass band invaded a Target store, with cameras rolling, to protest that corporation's anti-gay political donations. And rumor has it that the Yes Men handed out lyrics to the Hey Mackie song during a screening of one of their movies in Manhattan, after which audience members took it to a nearby Whole Foods. The flash mob idea isn't anything new, but it's not often used for political purposes. Ophir Uziel of the BLO says the actions are an appealing way to convey political messages, but they may not be so revolutionary.
People can be more active through that channel and create communities online. The disadvantage is that you disassociate yourself from the streets, which is it's a big part of the civil rights action and movements. And, you know, people get upset, they go to the streets, they go to City Hall, you know. And if we continue with a trend of like, oh, I don't want to be in the street, I don't want to interface with, you know, actual people, you create a division of class and race, and you are excluded to the people that you know online and what you know online, the people that get you the links or whatever. So in terms of access and exposure, there is advantages and disadvantages.
The BLO is still doing flash mobs, but it prioritizes supporting direct actions in local communities. Activist groups invite them to play for their causes. Deciding what gigs to play requires a monthly meeting, as the BLO operates by consensus.
Are there any questions about this gig? Or people?
The band asks political groups to answer questions to help them consider what gigs they'll play.
Two questions that get more into the politics, like what is the role and leadership of people of color in the organizing of this action? What is the participation of the relevant communities? Was anyone from that neighborhood involved in planning this action, or is this sort of this outside idea that's getting put here?
Jamie Spector says from the start, they knew they wanted to play world music, so they had to have politics around cultural appropriation.
Because it is so common for particularly sort of European or European-descended people to play and use and exploit and profit from music from oppressed people from around the world, that it's important that we say something about what our thinking is around that. So we do play music from around the world. Our goal is to do it as respectfully as we can and to say, you know, and to identify the music that we're playing, to give credit where credit's due, to educate people about the history of the song that we play.
So there you have it. Let's do it. Let's start a radical marching band for this town. Are you up for the challenge? I'm challenging you now. Right now, to do this on the air. Yeah, so if you want to do that or anything else about the working week and its new half-hour format, you can contact me at 3volt, all one word, at gmail.com. You can, what else can you do? You can, I don't know, get a carrier pigeon and tie a little message to it and, no, I'm kidding. What's the other best way to contact? That's the best way to contact me. Or Facebook. I'm on Facebook. Yeah, I'm on Facebook. Just look for Scotty Hertz. So you've been listening to The Working Week here on CFRU 93.3 FM. I'm going to slide in a couple more announcements, and then special treat. I'm going to give you a special treat from a blast from the past, but also perhaps music of the future. So what's coming up? Jenny Whiteley, Dan Whiteley, and Riley Bogus, Saturday, October 2nd at the Cornerstone, which is at 1 Wyndham Street North. $20 in advance. Tickets available at the venue. Oh, okay. So yeah, go to the Cornerstone, get tickets. The Ready Steady Go Tour 2010 is on its way. Women and Electroluminescent, Sunday, October 3rd, 2010 at the Cinema, 121 Wyndham, Suite 106. Bands on at 10 p.m. It's all ages, and that's $7, unlike Kanon's $38. $7. I was so used to hearing people saying dollars, I've started saying it myself. Give me $7, you can see some bands. Here's another one. Young Rival, The Coast at the E-Bar, Thursday, September 30th, which is this coming Thursday. Also $7. Doors at 9:30, bands at 10. It is all ages, and it is licensed, or LIC. Sponsored in part by... No, I'm not going to give a plug for them. I'm just not going to do it, even though I like their beer. Huh. October 20th. Who's playing? The Slackers with the Green Room Lockers. 16 in advance, 18 at the door, all ages, license, blah, blah, 9:30 at the E-Bar, 41 Quebec Street, www.sellout.ca for more information on that show. What else have I got? The Guelph Platform. Become a founding member by September 30th. That is creating and maintaining a versatile and accessible space for local artists and artists, organizations of all genres, cultures, and economic circumstances to work, collaborate, and connect. How can you get in touch with them? www.guelphartsplatform.ca to find out more. So that's all I've got time for today. It just goes so fast, the half hour, doesn't it? So, I hope you enjoyed yourselves today, and I will speak to you next week. Feel free to contact me about the show and starting Radical Marching Band or any other work issues you might have. I may be able to help. So I'm going to leave you with Raymond Scott, the song that was mentioned in that last piece. This is Raymond Scott from a collection, The Music of Raymond Scott, Reckless Nights and Turkish Twilights, which came out quite a few years ago for the rediscovery of Raymond Scott. And anybody who has watched any Looney Tune cartoon ever will recognize this song. And this is probably his signature song. This is Powerhouse. Take care, folks. Talk to you next week.